Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees. All that is troublesome within the heart becomes practically destroyed almost to nil, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, who is praised with transcendental hymns, comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, text number 18. Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yuktena chatmana hari pashat yudashinam prakritim cha tochasam. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In that position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As the contamination of the germs of a particular disease can influence a weaker person, similarly, the influence of material nature or illusionary energy can act on the weaker or conditioned soul, but not on the liberated soul. Self-realization is the position of the liberated state. One understands his constitutional position by knowledge and vairagya, renunciation. Without knowledge, one cannot have realization. The realization that one is the infinitesimal part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit makes him unattached to material conditioned life. That is the beginning of devotional service. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, one cannot engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord. In this verse, therefore, it is stated, jnana vairagya yuktena, when one is in full knowledge of one's constitutional position and is in the renounced order of life, detached from material attraction. Then by pure devotional service, bhakti yuktena, he can engage himself as a loving servant of the Lord. Paripashyati means that he can see everything in its right perspective. Then the influence of material nature becomes almost nil. That is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. When one is self-realized, he becomes happy and is free from the influence of material nature. And at the same time, he is free from lamentation and hankering. The Lord states that position as mad bhaktim labhate param, the real state of the beginning of devotional service. Similarly, it is confirmed in the Narada Pancharatra that when the senses are purified, they can then be engaged in devotional service of the Lord. One who is attached to material contamination, I repeat that, one who is attached to material contamination cannot be a devotee. Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yuktena chatmana paripashyatyudashinam prakritim cha tochasam. In that position of self-realization by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. Om agyanatimarandasya jnanangana salakaya chaksurum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namam. Sri Chaitanya manomvistam shapatam yenam bhutale svayam rupa gitamayam datati spam patantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Girara Shivasri Gaura Bhaktavindam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Kapila Muni is explaining the science of devotional service, which is a very great science. It is not a sentimental philosophy. It is a science. Science means, in the spiritual science, the study of spirit. Of course, in the material world, everyone is studying matter, but here we have a study of the actual science of devotional service. So this chapter is called The Glories of Devotional Service, those glories. So here, the quality of devotional service, one of the instant qualities of devotional service is that Bhakti Devi, she has two children. Those children, two sons, one is called Jnana and one is called Vairagya. So these are all the family of spiritual life, Jnana, Vairagya. Notice it doesn't say Vairagya Jnana. It always says Jnana Vairagya. So the first principle of spiritual life is that one must have Jnana. Therefore Krishna says, to those who are constantly worshiping me with all their hearts, I give them the understanding, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. I give them the understanding from within the heart. So this is called Hridaya. Hridaya, this is called, just like we are singing every morning, that the spiritual master is giving us this this knowledge from within the heart. So this knowledge is there within the heart. What is this knowledge? This knowledge is self-realization. The qualities of the soul, we always use that phrase, sat-chit ananda. So sat-chit, chit means knowledge. So automatically when one becomes self-realized, then there must automatically be knowledge. Otherwise one's not becoming self-realized. Because the self is full of knowledge. So if knowledge is not coming, then the self is not being realized. So this first quality must be there, this jnana vairagya. So this quality of knowledge is there within the heart, and from chit, then there's also sat-chit. And then what is the third thing? Ananda. So this ananda, as soon as there is ananda, then there is vairagya. You cannot have vairagya without ananda. It's not possible. Then it is artificial. That's why in the other processes of yoga, this idea of vairagya, jnana vairagya, are not complete. The complete science is bhakti jnana vairagya. So the bhakti is the most essential factor. And that bhakti, devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a great science. Many times Prabhupada uses the example that the hand, the satisfaction of the hand, he also uses the example of the leaves of the tree. The leaves of the tree or the hand, they are part of a complete system. The body is a biological system. Even science admits that, isn't it? They say a biological system. Just like we say solar system, biological system, ecological system, oceanic system. There are so many systems. Something which goes on by order. Something which is ordered. Systematic. Systematic arrangement. Just like when we have a car, it's a mechanical arrangement. And it's made up of different systems. The water cooling system, the heating system, the combustion system. There are so many different units within the complete unit. So this is described as Om Purnamada Purnamidam, that the personality of God, it is perfect and complete. These qualities are very important to study, that God is complete. We are incomplete. We are feeling incomplete. That's a fact. We are feeling incomplete. Not only are we feeling incomplete, but we are actually incomplete in so many different ways. If you were to describe our condition, one thing you could say is that it's definitely incomplete, isn't it? Study all the things about your body. Every single thing about you is incomplete. You have incomplete hearing, incomplete seeing, incomplete taste, incomplete touch. You have incomplete knowledge. You have incomplete intelligence. Sometimes you're completely stupid, isn't it? Or completely thick, like a log. So that completeness may be there. We can say that guy is a complete idiot, isn't it? Sometimes we use that. So at least we've got some completeness, but unfortunately the wrong direction, isn't it? It's the wrong direction if we say this that guy's a complete fool. But in the other direction, we can say incompleteness. And most of all, we are very acquainted with the fact that we are incomplete. We are incomplete as individual persons. As people, we are incomplete because we are not completely satisfied. We are not completely satisfied. Now, generally, in the material world, that incomplete satisfaction is also understood by the materialist. I mean, anyone will admit that I'm not completely happy. But the difference is that they think that they can make an arrangement to actually rectify that problem. They think that they can make the arrangement. This is the difference between an atheist and a theist, is that the atheistic person automatically feels by his egotistic assumptions, egocentric intelligence, he feels that if we make some adjustment to this incomplete situation, if we make some adjustment to this incomplete arrangement, we can actually make it complete. It just needs a little bit more addition. For instance, I'm unhappy because I haven't got a nice big house, or I haven't got a nice wife, or I haven't got a nice family, I haven't got a good bank account, I haven't even got a good bank manager. I haven't got a good this and I haven't got a good that. So if I make these things good, then I'll be happy. This is the idea circulating within the mind. Because it's natural that the living entity separated from God instinctively thinks himself to be God. He has no other way of ascertaining his situation. Just like when you're in darkness, when you are in complete darkness, then whatever light you can gain, then from that small amount of light, you try to make things out, isn't it? Just like if you're in a very dark room, if you had this experience, and there's a little light coming out of the keyhole. So that little bit of light coming through the keyhole, that's what you work on, isn't it? That's what you start working on. You can't work on darkness. You have to work on light. So in the material world, we are all born into darkness. So that darkness, ignorance, is no good. So we have to get some light. Light means knowledge. We need, vitally need some knowledge. But unfortunately, we are limited by our knowledge. And therefore, because we are limited by our knowledge, we are not capable of vairagya. We are not capable of renunciation. Because the knowledge of the material world, unfortunately, is relative to our condition. That is why it's called conditional knowledge. Conditional knowledge means that knowledge which is reliant upon certain conditions. So in the material world, the idea is to make it an adjustment in the conditions, and then hopefully the knowledge will increase. With the increase of knowledge, we will gain mastership over this world. We will gain control. That's the idea. When we gain control, then we can be the architects of our own destiny. Then we can create all sorts of wonderful arrangements by which we'll become happy. That's why if you look at the materialist, what do they gauge their situation on? They gauge it on what is called the different, perimeters, or they have what they call gross national production. Isn't it? A country is gauged by how much it produces. So how much wealth is produced, how much materialistic items in the form of what they call consumer goods, by producing food, by producing oil, by producing so many different things, a country becomes known as being prosperous. Just like America is considered a prosperous country. So you would automatically think that everyone in America should be happy. But it's the most miserable country on the planet. Now, economists can't understand this. I was reading an article where, and hearing also, that they're coming to the conclusion now, because see, what they're reaching is a certain saturation in materialism. When they reach a certain saturation, they look around and see that everyone's just as miserable as they were 100 years ago. There's no difference. They've actually got some records going back, what they call these polls, where they interview people, find things out. So they got records going back, and actually people are no more happier today than they were 70 years ago, 80 years ago, 100 years ago. They're no more happier. You can say that their situation has vastly increased. They've got computers and internet and television and cinemas, and they've got better facilities for driving around. So they got all of these things. But unfortunately, what they call the self-satisfaction is at a very low level. Because basically, they're gauging, or their center of observation is based upon the body. And therefore, the social situation is an extended form of selfishness of what they consider to be actual happiness. And because they don't have any happiness, then they can't have any detachment. You see, detachment comes from happiness. You see, if you see people, generally, if you study, for instance, in a condition in the material world, you'll find that when people are happy, I mean, Prabhupada uses the example that when you've gone to a restaurant and you've eaten a big meal, I mean, I don't know if anyone's had the example of that. If you're really full up, you don't mind giving food away. You're quite happy to give it away because you're feeling satisfied. Therefore, the renunciation is very automatic because in you're feeling satisfied. So similarly, people who are generally financially satisfied, they donate. People who are satisfied in their materialistic, they're more generous. But people who are not satisfied, then they're more attached. Now, if you study this further, you'll find that this pleasure, just like, for instance, you'll find that in the material world, the search for pleasure generally goes on in many, many levels, and the real conclusion of so-called material pleasure is found when one is engaged in a relationship. Just like you find that in the youth, a young boy or young girl, they generally are engaged in so many different pursuits of happiness, in various types of frivolity and going to holidays and clubs and restaurants and discotheques and rock shows. And they engage themselves in so many different types of frivolous activity. But as soon as they find a relationship, generally when they find a relationship, that relationship between a man and a woman, then they settle down, they have a marriage, they have children, then automatically, from a crude example, they become more settled in their behavior. And actually, they even are willing to just sit down with each other. You'll find that when people are middle-aged or older, they just sit at home, just, let's have a night in, darling, and sit together watching telly. They do all these kind of boring activities. If they'd have done them when they were young, they would be considered completely boring. But now that they've settled into relationship, then they're even sometimes content to be with just each other, just me and you, darling. So when they go on their caravan holidays, they stay together in their little caravan, and they come out and they sit together, have breakfast together with the children, and go down to the beach, and it's all very civil. They don't go raving down to discotheques and fast cars and nightclubs. All those things are, they're not very much attractive because they've now got a relationship, you see? So if you study any kind of human psychology, you'll find that relationship is the real essence of happiness. It is the real thing of happiness, because relationship is the reciprocation of love. Now, that aspect of love, generally people consider love in the materialistic sense, that which is related to the body. So, devotional service, as propounded, as given by Lord Chaitanya, this is another type of love. This love is the love of the transcendental plane. It's a much different love of the material world. In the material world, love is there, but it's perverted. Perverted means that it's actually manifested in a perversion. That perversion is that we individualistically see ourselves as the center of love. In other words, it's actually egotistic. Love is selfish in the material world. We see ourselves as the benefactor of love. Therefore, when we love in the material world, it is relative to our body. It is relative to the extended body in the form of family, in the form of society, friendship, all of these things. So all of these relationships, like friend and lover and brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers, these are all perverted manifestations of those five major relationships that exist in the spiritual world. But here, they are pervertedly manifested. So therefore, Prabhupada uses that example that when one does not understand the complete arrangement, when one does not understand the complete arrangement, just like when the example is that when you want to see in darkness, you cannot see. But as soon as the sun rises, then everything gets seen in its proper perspective. When you're in a very dark room, then sometimes you think a chair is a table. Or you think this is that, or you think you're not sure, there's not enough actual perception, there's not enough understanding to have conclusive knowledge. Therefore, everything becomes vague, everything becomes very much bewildering. If you're in a pitch dark room, it's very frightening actually, because you're worried you may trip over something, break your neck, you may hit your head on an iron bar and stick in your eye. There's all sorts of fears that haunt the mind. As soon as the sun rises, then everything falls into perspective, and then you feel relaxed. You feel, actually, now I can deal with this situation. I can deal with it, because I now see things in their perspective. So similarly, in the material world, everyone is situated in ajnana, ajnana timarandasya. Timarandasya means the dense darkness of this material world, and ajnana, this dense darkness of the material world causes ajnana. So therefore, we need jnana. We need jnana. But where does jnana come from? In the different yoga systems, there is jnana yoga, hatha yoga, raja yoga, so many different types of yoga. But all of those different yoga systems, they're reliant upon one's individualistic endeavor. And therefore, that is why progress in those yoga systems is very, very difficult for those who are embodied, for those who are conditioned. That's why Krishna says meditation on the impersonal aspect of God is very, very difficult for those who are embodied. Although it does exist, but it's very, very difficult. So here, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the sages of Naimisharanya, they are also studying this point. They're studying the point of what is the supreme occupational duty? Because everyone has function. And if we study natural functions of the body, they're all similar in every human being. We are all functioning according to the mechanical laws of nature. Everyone in this room breathes through their nose. No one's breathing through his feet. Isn't it? We all consume foodstuff through the mouth. We all see through the eyes. We all have our digestive system. We have our, what you call, biological system. We live within an environmental system, ecological system, atmospheric system. We live within a solar system. We are living within the complete arrangement of God. But unfortunately, the one factor which causes incompleteness is incomplete knowledge of that complete arrangement. That is the problem. Because there's incomplete knowledge of that complete arrangement, therefore everything we do is incomplete. You see? It's like if you have many thousands of zeros, they're all useless. But as soon as you put one in front of them, then when you look in your bank account, you feel very, very happy. Isn't it, Radha? When you got that, and you look in your bank account and it's got 1,000 or 100,000 or 1 million, then you feel very happy in your mind. Oh, but all it is the same noughts, but there's one in front. It comes into significance, isn't it? We all know that when we look. So therefore, similarly, there are so many systems and so many arrangements that are studied in the material so-called jnana. The jnanis of the material world, the so-called scientists, they are also jnanis. But their jnana is in relationship to the mundane. They can't move beyond that. They can't go beyond material because they have no knowledge of an existence beyond the material. They have no understanding that there is another dimension, that there is higher plane, that there is the transcendental realm. They cannot actually comprehend that because everything must be verified by their senses. All the knowledge of the material world has to be actually verified by our senses. Whenever we hear something, immediately we scrutinize it with our other senses. If I say to you that I saw three green elephants running around the temple, you'll immediately think, three green elephants? First of all, you think, I've never heard of a green elephant. And then what would three green elephants be doing in Bhaktivedanta Manor? So you'd be scrutinizing and you think, this guy's an idiot. He's actually gone wacky. So you'd naturally start, because you can't, your other senses cannot actually accept that thing. It's not acceptable. Because why? Because you can't relate to it. There may well be three green elephants running around the temple. But because you've never had experience of that, and you have so many reasons to doubt it, you therefore reject it as totally rubbish. So therefore, similarly, when we hear about the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the other senses cannot actually verify it. When we say God is appearing as a boar, so we think, what? A hog flying around in space? This is a bit too much. Now, if it was a person flying around in space, that might not be so bad, because we have had spacemen out there, and they've flown around a bit. So that could be, but a hog? What's a hog doing floating around, running around space, picking up planets from the bottom of these oceans? So therefore, God has a problem. Prabhupada said God has a problem. Because if he doesn't do anything wonderful, they say, well, how can you be God? Just like Sai Baba. Sai Baba is claiming to be God, so at least he's got to produce some ashes. That's the very least he has to do. If he couldn't even bring out a few ashes, even though you can get loads of ashes in all the fireplaces around the world, but he brings them out of underneath a table or something like that and makes it look like they came out of his hand. So therefore, everyone says, oh, look, Bhuti, Bhuti. God has produced something. But God is producing unlimited universes. What's a few ashes? But they don't understand. So even some little poor fellow like him, he has to bring out a small quantity of gold. He can't bring out a mountain of gold. He can bring out a little bit in his hand and everyone goes, ooh, look, gold is coming. Then definitely he's God. So this is the foolishness of the material world. So Prabhupada said God has a problem, because if he does anything wonderful, how can people accept it? They can't verify it. It's not comprehensible to their mundane imagination. Therefore, that example of frog in the well is there. So generally, spiritual knowledge is not available for anyone and everyone. Therefore, it says, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, paripashena sevaya, that tadviri paripatena paripashena, here also paripashyat udashinam, that one sees from approaching the spiritual master, one should come because why? Because the spiritual master has tattva darshana. Tattva darshana means one who has seen the truth. So paripashena, one should remove all of those conceptions that one has, because one should understand with intelligence that all of these conceptions of the material world are relative to the mundane plane. And if I want to bring myself to the transcendental plane, then the only thing I require is to hear. I don't require anything else. It's amazing, isn't it? If you want to transfer yourself to the spiritual world, you only need to hear. There's no need of any addition or subtraction from what you've already heard throughout your life. There's no need to bring any of your mundane baggage to the transcendental plane. You don't have to bring your theories of evolution or the speculation of science or the speculation of the mundane empiricism or the speculation of your observations. You don't need any of that baggage, because all of that baggage is inadequate in a plane which is adequate. You see? You don't need to bring the inadequate to the adequate. You may need to bring the adequate to the inadequate, but you never need to bring the inadequate to the adequate. So the first principle of spiritual life, you must understand that you're existing within the inadequate. If you're not realized on that plane, if you don't understand that the material world is inadequate, and I want to be adequate, then you cannot actually make that transition from mundane to spirit. If you still think that there's something to be captured here in the material world, therefore that word paripashena means to give up. To give up your mundane speculations, your mundane conceptions, your mundane ideas, then you can move forward. And then one, what is the quality that one should have? Obviously, one should be submissive. So just try to learn the truth by approaching the bona fide spiritual master. Offer, render service unto him. Inquire submissively. That word submissive is paripashena. Sevaya, to render service in that mood. So we should understand, that's the meaning of this whole Sankhya Yoga, means to understand the nature of this inadequate creation of this separated energy of Krishna, the material world. We don't need to take anything from this world to that transcendental realm, which is complete, because Krishna is complete. He is Purnam. And therefore, on the plane of Purnam, Purnam means perfect and complete. The Supreme Personality Godhead is perfect and complete. So when he comes into the material world, he says, here is my completeness. Have a look. You see, this is the whole meaning of understanding the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the sages of Namasharanya said, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Jnanyatyashu Viragyam Jnanam Charyada Hoitakam. By rendering devotional service onto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from this world. So, how does one get this causeless knowledge and detachment? So that is actually explained here, that the sages of Namasharanya are inquiring from Suta Goswami. So Suta Goswami says that Savai Pamsam Parodamo Yakto Bhakti Adhoksache Ahoitakiya Pratiyata Yeyatma Supersedati. That supreme occupational duty, the supreme function of society, the supreme function of the government or the individual, the supreme function of all humanity, what is that function? That function is to actually render causeless devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of God. Such devotional service must be free from all motivation and interruption, in order to, yayatma supersedati, in order to give full satisfaction to the self. So that full satisfaction to the self is automatically there in every living entity. It's not something that you need to find independently. In the material world, satisfaction is something you need to look for. In spiritual life, satisfaction is not anything you need to look for. All you need to look for is to glorify, the opportunity to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the devotee, as Krishna says, satatam ketayanto mam, The devotees are always satatam, kirtayantam. They are always constantly glorifying me. Krishna says, the Mahatmas, the great soul, they are always constantly glorifying me. They are engaged in my devotional service with great determination and faith. They offer homage unto me. They worship me in devotion. So this is the essence of Krishna consciousness, is simply to somehow or other to glorify Krishna, to find the opportunity. A devotee is always anxious. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam is the glorification of Krishna. Nothing else. There's no big, mystery to the Srimad Bhagavatam. It means the beautiful glorification of Krishna, the beautiful story of Krishna. And then, automatically, by that glorification, one becomes completely satisfied. The Atma supersedeti. The Atma, the soul, becomes completely happy. And when there is full happiness of the soul, because what is the happiness? As it says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Bhavitam Mitam Uttama. That this knowledge is the king of all knowledge because it gives direct perception to the self by realization. It gives direct perception by realization. And what is that? It is joyfully performed. Joyfully performed. The joyfulness, the happiness of spiritual life comes from satisfying Krishna. That is all. There's no other need. In the material world, there is so much need of extraneous endeavor because there is no possibility of satisfaction. Therefore, there is a constant upheaval of people trying to do this, to get this, to make this adjustment, to make that adjustment. But you'll find that these adjustments of the material world, they're endless, and they're never, never capable of satisfying the self, because they have nothing to do with the self. The adjustments of the material world and the mental adjustments of this plane, on the material plane, have nothing to do with the soul. The soul is only existing on the plane of pure love of God. And that level of pure love of God was displayed wonderfully in the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he is showing by practical example, simply by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One will be free from all desires, completely. And that was exemplified in the life of the Goswamis, the life of many of the great acharyas. All of the acharyas up there that you see on the wall, they are all a perfect example of this complete satisfaction from simply chanting the holy names by glorifying Krishna in their very lives. So they achieve perfection. And we see that once one becomes a devotee, then automatically one can give up all of these what are generally great attachments. People are so much attached in the material world to sex life, intoxication. A devotee can go without sex life 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year, year after year after year after year, if he simply engages in glorifying Krishna. It's a fact. It's not a sentiment. If you go to any other process, you will find it very, very difficult even to stop the mind thinking of sex for 5 minutes. It's a fact. You can go and try. As soon as you stop chanting your rounds, as soon as you stop reading Srimad Bhagavatam and reading Bhagavad Gita, as soon as you stop associating with devotees, immediately your sex desire will increase manyfold. Your desire for all of these things, like watching telly, going to here, going to there, having a little booze or whatever, it'll all come very quickly flooding into your heart. So that shows by practical example. Prabhupada said, if you stop remembering Krishna, you will immediately carry on from where you left off in the material world. It is that exact. Very exact science. So therefore, don't take it lightly that you are being freed from this encumbrance of nature of material life, but it is a great boon, it is a great gift of the spiritual master, and therefore one has to repay the spiritual master. How? By simply pleasing Krishna. That is all the spiritual master wants, is to please Krishna. And what does Krishna say in the whole Bhagavad Gita? He only mentions one particular thing that pleases him, exceptionally pleases him. He says, anyone who explains the science of the devotional service to devotees, devotional service is guaranteed, and in the end he will come back to me. Of this is, there is no doubt. There is no one more dear to me in this world. No will there ever be anyone so dear as he. So this is a very great secret in the Kali Yuga, what is called the preaching of the transcendental holy name, the preaching of the transcendental Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. These things should be taken very seriously in order to fully satisfy the self. Okay, we're finished there. Is there any questions though? A deep silence. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapranam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.